So now let's look at a quick conceptual view of marketing analysis, where the first point says understand target customer. So analyze target customer, predict trends, monitor consumer behavior. So please understand, when I talk about the first point, I am specifically talking about the fact that there's a lot of importance in today's world is given to the customer experience. And when I talk about the customer experience, what am I talking about? That personalization, that customization for the customer. And if I cannot do that right customization, I'm not going to be able to generate the predictions as I need to, or the predictions need to be. For that, what will happen also, that you would lose that customer. You do not want to do that. So what becomes important is also understanding how the customer is behaving. Is there a change in the trend of the customer behavior? What is resulting into that change in the trend? It could have nothing to do with your marketing campaign. It could be a promotion or a growth or a decrement, any such thing that could have taken place in his life. So understanding your customer on an ongoing basis, or the behavior of the customer, is extremely important. Then the next talks about monitoring business goals. Connect online behavior with offline data and measure ROI and CLV. So CLV is nothing but customer lifetime value. That is the loyalty of the customer that he's been in the system. So when we're saying we monitor business goals, we are basically now trying to understand, is the online behavior that we are already talking about, is it in line with the business objective, or is it working as per the prediction? So is the online and offline data generating the same amount of results for you? So you also measure, what is my return on investment? Can that be enhanced in any particular way? And what is the customer lifetime value? Then you have to measure. So you've understood, you've basically monitored the business goals. Now the next step is measuring the performance. What are you doing to measure? Real-time performance, forecast future performance, monitor campaign performance, ROS, that is return on ad spending, bidding strategy, budget allocation across channel. This is just a summarization of what we've spoken over a period of time, where I say basically, what is my real-time performance? Is that trend going to remain the same? Is it continuing as per the future prediction that I did? I will have to monitor my campaign on a regular basis. So when I say on regular basis, depending on how the campaign is performing, what are the tweaks that you've made to the campaign, you might want to do daily performance, or you might want to do a weekly performance, an alternate day performance. If you just made changes to the campaign like yesterday, then you might want to monitor the campaign performance for the next couple of days on a continuous basis to ensure that you're getting the right performance. Then we've spoken about the return on ad spending. What is my bidding strategy? That means if I have to bid for a project, or how does it work? What strategy do I know? Do I need to keep into a budget or any such thing? And finally, we talk about budget allocation across channels. So what is the various budgets that have changed set for the various channels where I'm basically putting up my marketing campaign? Does anything on either one of these channels need to be changed, or does it need to be changed? And all of that. Then we have analyze competition. Compare marketing activity against competitors, analyze the market share, and monitor the brand visibility. So obviously, like I said, there's going to be multiple competitors in the same line or in the same strategies. Then what am I going to do? I have to see where I stand against my competitors. Are my marketing activities similar to my competitors? Is my brand getting the right visibility? Do I need to change my strategy that is there? If it's too similar and you're not getting the right results, am I still holding a large part of the market share or not? Then you have enhanced marketing team, which is build a data-driven team, increase the credibility of results, improve the efficiencies of marketing priorities and ROI tracking. So ultimately, the end of all this is, how do I enhance everything? I have to have a better data-driven team. The right team who can give me the right analysis, give me the right dashboards, or give me the right reports at the right time, and are able to work better with the data. I want to increase the confidence level that I have in my results, and I can improve the efficiency of my entire marketing objectives, the priorities that I have, and basically do more with ROI tracking. Now, let's understand the entire cycle. So we have generation, where we spoke about data generation, how the data is getting generated, and what are the various modes of generation of data. Then we come to the next point, which is collection. That means, how am I collecting this data? Am I collecting it through APIs, through the platforms, through the cookies? That is all we spoke about earlier regarding the data collection. So the data and generation, the data collection will go hand in hand when it comes to processing. So am I integrating the data? What fields am I using? What fields am I not using? How is the entire process that is taking place? Where am I storing this data? How is it being managed? How is it being analyzed? Are the analysis being done right? Do I have the right visualization? Am I interpreting the results right? And all of those. Okay, now let's come on to survey biases. So what are the various service biases? First, we have the collection bias. What does the collection bias tell us? Survey question may have a bias lean. Exercise caution while creating question to ensure that the audiences answer honestly and unswayed by the wordings of the question. So now this is purely talking about the collection bias, where I'm talking about the data collection process. Now during the data collection process, like I said, at times there might be a need where I might need to get the data collected which is missing from my studies, or the analysis that I want to do does not have a particular data that I need. So for that, what I'll need to do is basically design a survey. Now when it comes about designing the survey, what am I going to do is, obviously, the survey has to have certain questions in it so that the respondents can answer. Now what you're doing is, when you're designing the survey, you have to be extremely, extremely careful. What does this talk about? That I will need to basically create questions in such a manner that the audience is able to answer the questions correctly and in the right manner. And also, the wordings of the question need to be as clear and concise as possible. When we talk about this, you have to ensure, because this does not lead to a personal bias from the respondent side coming into the survey in, maybe he or she did not understand the question correctly, or something went wrong during that phase which resulted in a certain bias that came into the picture. Now, based on that, now so when you talk about the data, this could affect the data collection in a large way, even though this might not be an invalid or a missing or an outlier. This will affect the data quality because the answer is not as you wanted. So the best way to do that was, when you're designing a survey, try to include as many MCQs or as many close-ended questions as possible. Limit the number of open-ended questions that come in. Because the moment there are open-ended questions that are coming into the picture, what is going to happen is you're going to talk a lot about the survey and the personal bias that is trying to come in. So you might want to limit the answers that the respondent can give so that you are able to extract more accurate response from there. Then we come to the subject bias. That if the audience know that their responses will be read, their answers may be biased towards what seems socially acceptable. To avoid this, consider pairing the survey data with behavioral data from other collection metrics to get the full picture. Now, please understand that we are social animals. So, what are we trying to do? is we are continuously trying to please one another. And this especially happens when you're doing maybe organizational or getting the data from a particular place. So if I know that my response is going to be read and it's going to be linked back to me, then there is a possibility that I might not write what I truly feel or how I feel. I might instead bias it more towards something that the society would accept and not something that might not be acceptable, but it is what I believe and I do it. So in this case, what you would want to do is ensure that the respondent has complete anonymity of the data. When I talk about complete anonymity of the data, I'm saying that the answers do not need to be linked to the person, and let the respondent answer as per his preference and complete doing complete justice to the answer or how they feel. In case that is not possible and you feel that this person's response may be a little biased, you might want to link it to some other data, like maybe his data from social media, his behavioral data, and try to understand how exactly is what he's saying matches the kind of behavior the respondent is displaying. So in big data, we have a term called as veracity, whereas we say that more than 99% of people do not believe in the data or the authenticity of the data. So this is how you validate the authenticity of the data or how you clear the subject bias. Then you have the leading question bias, which is our product, like it says over here, our product reduces expenses by 40. Would you like to buy a better option? How likely are you to buy this product? This is to avoid the leading question bias. Use neutral language. Don't favor an opinion implicitly or explicitly. Don't lead a respondent to answer. Vary the options in a list. This could be done across questions with similar answers to ensure respondent doesn't make a decision based on chronological sequencing. So now, when we talk about the leading question bias, the question that you see on your screen is specifically now talking about what we call as a rhetorical question. Would you like to buy it? Mostly the option would be an answer would be an yes, which is kind of understood, which is more of a leading question that I'm pushing the respondent to answer a yes. So in a better ways, I would convert it maybe from a yes no question to a rating scale question. And this is how we see most of the questions are designed when you give a customer feedback, saying that how likely are you to buy this product, or so you basically now rate it, or even how likely are you to recommend this product if you're using it. So try to keep your language as neutral as possible. That means you neither favor, even though you're working for the organization, you're not favoring the organization, or you're not defavoring the organization against the organization. Try to keep it as neutral as possible, so which will allow the respondent to freely answer on their own. Another thing is, normally when we see a certain sequence of answers, that means if a rating scale is 1 2 3 4 5, 1 2 3 4 5, 1 2 3 4 5, in a sequential manner, I might just tend to tick 5 5 5 5 5, not varying my answers or not even reading the question. And you all can take that as an example. Basically, when you go to hotels and if they give you a feedback form, you just take one option across all without even at times reading the options that are there. Now, in survey terms, this is also called as flatliners. So if I have assume that I have a rating scale, which is distributed over a dimensional grid with maybe the ratings up across the top and the options on the side, and I continuously have only a single option, along with other data quality issues with that particular respondent, maybe he's also an outlier at some other question, then this would be considered as one of the terms to not include the responses for the respondent. Why? Because he or she could be purely answering just for the money or for the sake of doing it, not giving genuine responses. So if it is possible, not in rating skills, it might not be possible to vary the responses, but if you see a same set of responses that are coming across multiple questions, and if you can afford to, you might want to even change the order of those options so that the respondent is forced to think before clicking the option. Then we have another bias, which we talk about the ambiguous question bias. How do you feel about the process? Basically, what is the question telling us? Very ambiguous, imprecise language. Better it would be how satisfied with you are with you your person. Extremely, somewhat neutral, somewhat unsatisfied, or extremely unsatisfied. So, like I said, instead of having too many open-ended questions, you might want to reduce it to maybe more close-ended questions with specific, given the specific response to the user, and ensuring that you're getting the responses in the right direction. Other things that you can do to avoid an ambiguous question is, like I said, develop precise questions, so more of critical thinking that how is this question being perceived. You could also take the reviews of others, friends, neighbors, families, co-workers to see how they perceive the question. Add options for the responses to choose from. Make it more close-ended, giving them very specific responses. They can be yes or no, multiple choice, or a rating scale that you have. Consider another option is to consider conjoint analysis, which is conducted via a specialized survey to reveal how much a customer values a certain set of attributes in a product. It's tailored design ensure each question is direct and specific. That means when I'm asking the customer about a specific product or a specific service, I would want to work on the giving just a survey which talks about all the values or all the set of attributes which goes into that product or service, and see what he or she thinks about each one of them. What will that do? Is basically that will give a more specialized and a more narrowed down approach on what he likes or he likes, she likes, or he doesn't like, she doesn't like. Then you have something that we call as a complex question bias. We do not like complexity, so you might want to take care of that. What is a complex question bias? Is like the example given here. If you had to get work using a bicycle, bus, train, or car, or on foot, which would you choose? Now consider annual precipitation, your transport budget, and carpooling opportunities. Now, what has happened over here is it's too much information. I'm also asking their preference, I'm asking about their transportation budget, their annual perception based on that, and checking about carpooling options. The carpooling may not apply if I'm using a bicycle or a bus or train, or if I'm staying very close to the organization and I choose to come on foot. So it might not apply in all situations. So now what will I have to do is I will split it into smaller questions. Maybe I can say, based on the annual perception, what mode of work are you likely to use out of the following? Allowing them to make a choice. Then I might say that based on your how many funds do you allocate to your transportation budget every month or every year? And out of that, what would be your preference to choosing? And if there was carpooling available, then what would you do? Or how would you want to work with it? Would you want to use the carpooling instead of traveling by bus, train, or getting your own car? So trim the fat, make it more precise, split a complex into multiple questions that each has one focus, like I said. So the annual perception, participation, transport budget, and carpooling opportunities goes in three different questions. Employ a pairwise ranking system which prompts a user to rank options in order of the preference or compare each option to the others to determine a hierarchy of preference. So you can always either put a rating scale to them or you can put an order to them and ask them to make a choice. Another way would be qualitative interviews, focus groups to getting detailed answer. Again, the only problem with qualitative interviews and focus groups would be to basically note down the data and then finally entering this data into the system. collecting reliable insights using surveys, ensure the data is reliable, design clear, concise survey questions that we said. When your customer conducts the surveys, look for that could lead to inaccurate conclusions or certain questions which are not designed the right way. Now, we've done with the data collection, which talks about all the biases and how it can impact the data that you're collecting. Now, let's go through the data mining process and the techniques that are related with data mining. So what are we talking about? We're talking about automated data analysis. So we've spoken about this in the past where we said that certain process or certain parts of the data mining process can be automated, especially when I'm shifting through historical data in order to discover new information. So separate the data mining statistics, where a model is usually devised by a territory with certain specific analysis problems. So when I see a certain problem in the data, I might choose to use a certain form of automated analysis to clean out the data or to process the data in both ways. So even to clean out and even to do my analysis. This also distinguishes data mining from expert system, where the model is built by a knowledge expert from rules extracted from his experience. So obviously a data model is designed, or a machine learning model is designed, to understand the patterns in the data. But when the programmer or the developer can add his own experience to the knowledge data that is there, you can get better information, because they know based on their experience what are the rules that will work, what will not work, what is the data looking like, what is it not looking like. Also, automated discovery also separates data mining from OLAP, or the other word for in transaction processing is OLTP. So when you talk about OLTP, talks about transactional processing, OLAP talks about analytical processing. So it becomes very important that when I'm talking about OLAP, we are talking about simple query and reporting tools which are used to verify the hypothesis. If you remember, right at the beginning, we spoke about hypothesis and proving the hypothesis. So I basically just start my objective with basically getting the hypothesis and being able to prove that hypothesis, or experimenting based on that hypothesis. Data mining does not rely on a user to define a specific query, merely to formulate a goal such as the identification of fraudulent claims. So I do not have to do a specific query. What does it say over here? Data mining does not rely on a user to define a specific query, merely to formulate a goal such as identification. That means I just want to basically identify fraudulent claims. I might want to do a lot more things with that. Then now let's come to large or complex data sets. When I talk about large or complex data set, what am I saying? Data mining technologies make it possible to analyze very large data sets in a reasonable time. If I have to give you, I'm not sure how many of you all know about big data, but then why are we talking about large data sets? And like when we were discussing all the technologies that are possible, there was something called as Hadoop, and today every cloud platform would have an instance that would work with big data, because we've said that we are no longer dealing in terabytes, TBs or GBs of data. We've now gone on to petabytes and zigabytes of data. But even though my data set size has grown, so how has the data size grown? Over a period of time, if you look at it, especially now and even pre-COVID, most of us have about 2 GB of data in our mobiles. That's roughly, whether it's a prepaid or a postpaid. I'm not talking about a specific service, but I'm saying about mobile data. Now here, I'm not including data from IoT sensors. I'm not including data from that is used over the Wi-Fi, or I'm just purely talking about the mobile data on your phone. Now 2 GB we would exhaust every day. If I have to just run my phone, I'm sure we would go beyond that. A COVID scenario would be that a normal video call on your phone would consume, an hour of video call would consume about 1 GB of data, or to one, almost 1.5 GB of data. So when I have that much data, that means 2 GB is barely exhausted in less than 2 hours. Now multiply this data by the number of 2 GB into number of people in your house, number of people in your city, number of people across the state, across the country, and even across the world. That is the amount of data that is getting generated on a daily basis. Now, that along with past data and other sources of data, you're going to have very large data. So having to process this data in real time makes a lot, has to have the right system which allows you to process this much amount of data. It is also suitable for complex problems involving relatively small amounts of data, but there are many fields or variables to analyze. So now let's reverse the scenario where I say the data set is small, but the number of fields or the number of queries that I want to answer, variables that are there in the data, are much larger. My data set earlier was, in the first scenario, was large, and that's the reason I needed to process it. Here, even though my size of the data is not large, but the problems with the data makes it more complex, or the number of variables, the number of fields makes it highly complex to analyze. In that also, you have to ensure that you use the right mining technology in both the places. One which can handle the first scenario where it can handle a large data set. The second scenario where it can basically analyze the complex data that is available. So what is the goal of data mining? Is to unearth relationships in data patterns that may provide useful insight. An example of pattern discovery is the analysis of retail sales data to identify seemingly unrelated programs that are often purchased together. So random would be something, if I have to tell you what a data mining, that people who buy a laptop always tend to buy a laptop table. Or if you go to a shop, then most of the times earlier, if you look at the pattern that was available, when you buy a laptop, they would give you a bag, because that was the next purchase that the person would make, would be a bag. But now the thing they give you is, they give you a Bluetooth keyboard, they give you a Bluetooth mouse, they give you antivirus. So antivirus started after the, maybe after the bag or before the bag. So that is how things are correlated, but these are still related. I said you buy a laptop and you buy a laptop table. If it was a work from home scenario, then probably this would too have, would have been extremely related. However unlikely, but you would tend to buy them together. So these kind of patterns in the data is where my data mining approach would help me understand, oh, that buying a laptop can increase the chances of buying a laptop table, or maybe a cleaner for the laptop. That is not an unlikely pattern, but something like that. So normally you get scratch cards only with the mobile phone as a combo, or maybe even a scratch card for the screen of your, or maybe a case, something like that. Data mining outputs can be descriptive, which describe the characteristics of the data, and predictive, which give out inferences from the current data in order to make predictions. So they can be pretty descriptive. They could give you based on historical data, characteristics of the data, predictive, that what will happen in the future. And basically they can give you enough conclusions that you can derive, so that from the current data that you can make sure you make your predictions right. Okay, now let's look at the other facets of data mining. The different facets of data mining are better understood by distinguishing the applications of data mining, operations performed by data mining, and techniques used in data mining. These facets are applications which include database marketing, customer segmentation, customer retention, fraud detection, credit checking, and website analysis. So we have operations which include classification, prediction, clustering, forecast, association analysis, forecasting. And finally, we have techniques which is neural networks, decision trees, k-nearest neighbor, and Bayesian, and cluster analysis. So these are all different models, and I think we have an entire chapter dedicated to the various models that we have. Now let us just look at that. So now understand that what am I talking about? So we have applications, we have operations, and we have basically techniques that can be used in data mining. So applications, what can I do? Database marketing, that what database do I use for marketing to the people? Do I use this marketing that is online, offline, depending on what database do I want to use? Customer segmentation, very important. Basically, what is the buying profile? One of the things could be, what is the buying profile of the customer? Is he a high-end shopper or is he a low-end? Is there always a specific amount that the person is shopping for? Is it on the higher end, the lower end? What are the kind of products is he purchasing? What is the average value of the purchase? That will help me decide in which segment the customer fits. Then also, once I know the segmentation, which is basically a technique also, which is technique for clustering or using cluster analysis, that is there. Now then I can do customer retention. That means supervised learning model like a regression analysis could tell me whether this customer would leave my organization or tend to go to my competitor. And obviously, because we remember earlier we spoke about customer loyalty, where I said a loyal customer will give me free marketing, and that happens with all of us, where suppose I like the service from a particular vendor, or the products that the vendor supplied, maybe it's the along with the products being good, the customer delivery was very timely, or the customer service way he spoke to me in a very efficient manner and all of that. So I will, what will happen in that case is I will tend to pass on or tell people about the entire experience I had with that particular brand. And I will tell them, why don't you also invest in this particular brand, which makes it me a loyal customer, and it is, I'm doing marketing free of cost. So I want to try and retain my loyal customers. So you have customer retention, which can be implied with data after data mining. Then you can have fraud detection, whether the insurance claims are a fraud or there is some sort of financial transaction that is basically fraudulent that you can detect. There is credit checking, so all your loan applications online where you get loan approval in 5 minutes or so. You can have, it's all done via algorithms or various facets of data mining. And then you can have website as analysis, that means how is the website performing, what are the kind of people that are coming onto the website, and so on. Then we have classification, like I said, prediction. So I can classify customer into various segments. I can predict what they will be their behavior, or whether they are going to pay back the loan, not pay back the loan, and all of that. Clustering, where I group people together. Association analysis, understanding that is my product influenced, how much is it influenced by other factors that are there or other variables that are there in the environment. How will it behave in the future? What is the growth and the various techniques or the various machine learning models that I can possibly use? Okay, so we have been talking about data mining all this time. Now let's look at what is the definition for data mining. It talks about analyzing the process of analyzing large sets collected from multiple sources in different forms and formats to detect anomalies, find associations among different elements of the data variables, identify data clusters with similar clarity, classify data into various categories, find more suitable patterns, discern trends and patterns, and present in easily understandable formats using visualization and reports. So this is what we have been talking about the whole time, where I said we are collecting data from multiple sources, we are putting them in different forms, different formats, and trying to detect what is the factors or the variables affecting each other, how are they behaving with each other, what are the anomalies, is there some anomalies in the data that we cannot view, and building clusters that were where similar characteristics are, people or groups of similar characteristics are together, classifying data into various categories, finding suitable patterns in the data, and all formats in through visualization and reports. So data mining, also known as knowledge discovery in databases, basis KDK. Data mining, also popularly known as knowledge discovery in databases, which KDD, refers to the non-trivial extraction of implicit, previously unknown and potentially useful information from the data in databases. While data mining and KDD are frequently treated as synonyms, data mining is actually a core part of the knowledge discovery in databases. So now understand, when we talk about data, we say data is the new oil. So data has a lot of information, and only that information becomes oil or adds value to us when we can basically pull the knowledge out of the data, get information, more information, and apply that information to actionable insights. So this entire process is what we gather from a data. Now, we talk about the KDD process, which is the knowledge discovery in databases. As you all can see on the screen, is basically we are trying to understand what is that hidden information that is stored in the data that could be very vital to me. So even though data mining and KDD are used together as synonyms, so as other words for each other, that is not the part. When I talk about KDD, which is knowledge discovery in databases, I'm talking about a very critical and a very important part of the database, where data mining is just a very small form of it.